This is a reading of the book by Rudolf Steiner entitled A Way of Self-Knowledge and the Threshold of the Spiritual World. It's actually two books in one book. This is from the first part, A Way of Self-Knowledge, Meditation 7, The Nature of Experience in Suprasensory Worlds. We have seen what experiences a soul must have if it is to work its way through to the suprasensory worlds. These experiences can seem terrifying to many people. As a result, they might well think, I don't know what would happen to me if I were to venture into those processes, or whether I should bear them. Unquote. Under the influence of feelings of this kind, the thought can easily arise that it is better not to interfere artificially in the soul's natural course of development, that it is better to surrender peacefully to guidance that remains unconscious, and wait and see what this guidance brings to one's inner life in the future. Such a thought will always be rejected when one realizes that we, human beings, by nature, must help ourselves, and that if we fail in our duty and do nothing about the forces waiting to unfold in our souls, these forces will spoil. Forces of self-development exist in every human soul. When these forces and their meanings are experienced, there is no one who would not wish to obey the call to unfold them. No one who starts with a proper relationship to the processes to be worked through can be stopped from rising to the higher worlds. Such processes have been presented in the previous meditations. They were expressed in everyday language, which is the only way they can be expressed properly. Experiences on the path to supersensory knowing present themselves to the human soul in terms of familiar experiences, such as, for example, a heightened sense of loneliness, or perhaps the feeling that one is floating above a bottomless abyss. Experiencing such feelings produces the forces needed for this path of knowledge. They are the seeds that produce the fruits of supersensory cognition. In a sense, all these experiences carry deep within them something hidden. When we have these experiences, these hidden qualities are brought to their maximum tension. Quote unquote, something then bursts the feeling of loneliness, which is like a shell surrounding this something. This something then enters one's soul life to become a means of knowing. You must always remember that when you travel the right path, behind each experience, another awaits you. If the first experience is there, the other cannot fail to appear. This means that whatever you have to endure, you will find that a new power enters immediately. If you reflect on it calmly and peacefully, and give yourselves the time to notice what is trying to reveal itself in your soul, this power will allow you to bear what has happened. If something painful happens and you are convinced in your soul that powers exist that will allow you to bear the pain, powers with which you can connect, this will allow you to bear the pain. You will then be able to witness, as if you were an observer, experiences that would be unbearable in ordinary life. This is what allows those on the path to supersensory knowledge to live through the inward ebb and flow of many waves of feeling, and yet remain completely balanced in their sensory lives. It is, of course, quite possible that these inner experiences affect your attitude toward the sensory world in outer life. Then, for a time, you may not be able to deal with life as you did before entering on the path of knowledge. You will need to draw from what you have already achieved inwardly those powers that will enable you to cope again. When it is properly followed, there is no stage on the path of knowledge when you cannot do this. The best path of knowledge will always be one that leads to the suprasensory world by strengthening or intensifying soul life through inner absorption in thoughts or feelings. It does not matter whether you experience the thoughts or feelings as you would in a sensory world. What is important is that you live intensively with and in the thoughts or feelings, drawing together all the powers of your soul in them, during the time of inner absorption, your chosen thought or feeling should wholly fill your consciousness. Think of a thought that has created within your soul a sense of conviction. For the moment, leave aside the value of that conviction and simply live with the thought, so that you become completely one with it. This thought need not relate to things on a higher plane, although a thought that does may be more efficacious. For inner absorption, you can use a thought that simply reflects ordinary experience. Certain feelings can be particularly fruitful, for example, those representing the resolution to perform a deed of love, which you kindle within you into an intensified experience of human warmth and sincerity. If you seek cognitive experience, symbolic ideas acquired in life or through the advice of those who are expert in this area are especially effective. Such people know how fruitful these means are because they know what the results were for themselves. Through such absorption, which can become a habit and even a necessity of soul life, just as breathing is a necessity of the body, you can draw together, concentrate, and thereby strengthen the powers of your soul. But you must succeed in maintaining, during the period of inner absorption, a state in which no sensory impressions or any memories of them intrude upon the life of the soul. All memories of what you have experienced in daily life, of what gave joy or pain to the soul, must be silenced. The soul must devote itself completely and solely to what you have determined shall exist in it. The powers for supersensory cognition develop properly only through what you can achieve by means of such meditation, whose content and form the soul has created by the application of its own strength. Where you have acquired the content of your absorption is unimportant. You can obtain it from a specialist in this area, or from spiritual scientific literature. The important thing is that you yourself make what you have chosen an inner experience, and do not allow yourself to be distracted by what rises from your own soul or by what you consider the best content for absorption. The latter case has very little power, because the soul feels related to it from the outset, and so does not need to make an effort to become one with it. What is most effective for the development of supersensory cognitive powers lies precisely in this effort we make toward absorption, and not in being united with the content of the absorption as such. One can, however, come to supersensory vision by another path. There are those who come naturally to inner absorption, to passionate experience, whereby supersensory powers of cognition can be released within their souls by nature. Such powers then often arise suddenly in souls that seem not at all predestined to have experiences of that sort. Supersensory soul life can arise in many different ways, but only by following the path of knowledge described here can one arrive at an experience of the supersensory that one is the master of, in the same way as one is the master of experience in ordinary sensory life. In all the other different ways that the supersensory world can break into the soul's experience, supersensory experience forces itself upon us. Consequently, we lose ourselves in it, or we are deceived about the value or meaning of those experiences in the real supersensory world. You must always be aware that the soul changes as it moves along the path of supersensory knowledge. Whereas you are not usually taken in by the deceptions and delusions possible in physical life, it may well happen that as soon as you enter the supersensory world, you naively succumb to them. Perhaps it is the case that in everyday life you have a healthy sense of the truth and pride yourself in not believing things simply because they satisfy your sense of self. And yet despite this, you may still see in the supersensory world only what is in keeping with your sense of self, your egoism. Consider how this egoistic sense of self participates in what you see. You see what your sense of self inclines you to see. You do not realize, however, that this egoism also directs your spiritual gaze. It is quite understandable, then, that you take what you see in the supersensory world to be the truth. The only protection against delusion is gradually, by thorough self-reflection and an energetic will toward self-knowledge, to prepare yourself to notice how much that egoism is present in your soul and when it is speaking. If we regularly and unsparingly practice our meditation, always aware that our soul may fall here or there into egoism, we can slowly become free of its dominating influence. To gain true, unhindered mobility in the higher worlds, the soul must acquire a new perspective and make that perspective its own. That is, the soul must understand that certain of its qualities act differently in the spiritual world than they do in the sensory world. This is particularly clear if you consider the moral qualities of the soul. In the sensory world, a distinction is made between natural and moral laws. If you wish to explain natural processes, you cannot apply your moral ideas. You explain a poisonous plant by natural laws. You do not place a moral judgment on it because it is poisonous. In the animal world, you can at best speak only of suggestions of morality. A moral judgment in the real sense would only distort what we see there. It is only in human relationships that moral judgments begin to have significance for the value of existence. Once we are able to judge ourselves objectively, our assessment of ourselves always depends on how we judge ourselves morally. But nobody who considers sensory existence in the right light would view natural laws and moral laws as being identical or even similar. As soon as you enter the higher worlds, the situation is different. The more spiritual the worlds that you enter, the more the moral and the quote-unquote natural laws of those worlds coincide. When in ordinary life we say that an evil deed burns in someone's soul, we know we are speaking colloquially. We know that real burning is something quite different. This distinction does not exist in the supersensory worlds. Hatred and envy are both forces whose corresponding effects we may call the natural processes of those worlds. In the suprasensory world, hatred or envy result in the being who is hated or envied devouring, even annihilating, the hater or envier. Destructive processes that work adversely in the spiritual world are thereby formed. On the other hand, the effects of love in the spiritual world may be fittingly described as productive, beneficent, and radiating of warmth. We can notice this in the human elemental body. In the sensory world, the act of a hand that commits an immoral deed must be explained by the same natural law that explains a hand that behaves morally. Certain elemental parts of the human being, however, remain undeveloped when the corresponding moral feeling is absent. Thus we can attribute the incomplete development of elemental organs to the lack of moral qualities, just as we explain natural sense-perceptible processes through natural laws. We should never conclude that a portion of the elemental body suffers from incomplete development because its corresponding sensory organ is not fully developed. We must always be aware that very different principles apply in each of the various worlds. A human physical organ may have developed incompletely, while the corresponding elemental organ may develop normally, and in fact completely. The difference between the suprasensory and the sensory worlds is particularly significant with regard to everything having to do with quote-unquote beauty and quote-unquote ugliness. When you enter the suprasensory worlds, the way we use these concepts in the sensory world loses all meaning. In the supersensory world, we may call only those beings beautiful who reveal their inner experiences, what lives in them, to other beings, so that these can also participate in their experience. In the higher worlds, the capacity to reveal everything within you without hiding anything is called beautiful. This notion of beauty is identical to what we might call naked honesty, the sincere expression of what one carries within oneself. An ugly being is one whose outer appearance does not reveal what it contains, and who holds back its own experience for itself, hiding certain characteristics from other beings. Such a being withdraws from its spiritual surroundings. This concept of ugliness coincides with dishonest self-revelation. Lying and being ugly are one and the same reality in the spiritual world. An ugly being is one who lies. Furthermore, everything that we recognize in the sensory world as desire or wish means something quite different in the spiritual world. Desires that arise from the inner nature of the human soul in the sensory world do not exist in the spiritual world. What we could call desires in the spiritual world flame forth from what a being sees outside itself. A being there who lacks some quality that according to its nature it feels it should have, will see another being who has that quality, then it cannot help but see that other being, before it continually. In the sensory world, the eye naturally sees what is visible. In the supersensory world, a being is always guided by the lack of a quality into the vicinity of one who is complete in that regard. The sight of that being is a constant reproach. It acts as a genuine force to impel the being who is burdened by the lack to wish to correct its defect. This kind of experience is completely different from desire in the sensory world. In the spiritual world, free will is not affected by such relationships. A being can resist the feeling aroused by what it sees. If it does so, it will slowly move away from the being after whom it sought to model itself. A being who resists a better example will consequently find itself placed in a world where its living conditions are worse than those of the world for which it was, in a sense, predestined. From these examples, it is apparent that the human soul must transform its ideas when it enters the supersensory world. To describe the supersensory world correctly, concepts must be transformed, expanded, or dissolved into others. That is why there is always something inaccurate when one describes the supersensory world using unmodified concepts coined for the sensory world. It is worth reflecting on the fact that the concepts that we use are fully meaningful only in the supersensory world. In the sensory world, these concepts are used only more or less symbolically, or simply to indicate something. This is why someone can experience a lie as something truly ugly. Nevertheless, we must always remember that compared to the supersensory meaning of our words, their use in ordinary life is only an echo of their supersensory meaning, produced because all worlds are interconnected, and because these connections are dimly felt and unconsciously thought in the sensory world. Yet we must remember that in everyday life a lie that we might feel to be ugly need not be ugly in its outer appearance. In fact, it would be a confusion of these ideas if one sought to explain something ugly in sensory life as coming from some lie or deception. True, in the supersensory world, the situation is such that a lie, when it is really seen, appears as something ugly. Here again, however, deceptions may occur, and you must protect yourself from them. For instance, a being may come before you in the supersensory world whom you can quite correctly call evil, even though if your sense of beauty derives from sensory life, it reveals itself to you as beautiful. In this case, you will see correctly only if you can penetrate to the being's inner foundation. You will then experience how the quote-unquote beautiful manifestation is only a deceptive mask. What you thought to be beautiful, based on your sense-based understanding of that idea, will then become the object of your hate. At that moment, the evil being ceases to be able to create the illusion of beauty, but must reveal its true form to you, a form that can only be an incomplete expression of what lives within it. Phenomena like these demonstrate particularly well the necessity of transforming our ideas when we enter the supersensory world. The end of Meditation 7.